foes, they're in business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before.
That was Code Pink by Emma's Revolution. I'm Nufpreet of Code Pink. Welcome to our Code Pink radio show, presented by WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and many other community radio stations like Western Mass Community Broadcasting, WMCBLP 107.9 FM. We're also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Check out our website at www.codepink.org/radio, where you'll find all our episodes from episode 1 to our most recent. While we've been seeing lots of celebrities speak out in support of Israel, and the majority stay silent and ignore what's happening, those who stand up for truth, peace, and justice have been silenced. Talent agencies in Hollywood have blacklisted and censored artists who have spoken out in support of Palestine. The actor Melissa Barrera was fired by Spyglass Media from her role in Scream 7 because of her Instagram posts supporting Palestine. The actor Susan Sarandon was dropped by her talent agency UTA for speaking out at a pro-Palestine rally. We rallied in Beverly Hills in support of those artists who have been blacklisted and censored for speaking out about Palestine. Here our co-founder Jody Evans speak at the rally.
Hollywood, the stifling voices. We're raising up to Melissa Barrera and Susan Sarandon, but they got stories written about themselves. But there are so many in Hollywood that are losing jobs right now for loving the people of Palestine and for knowing that a genocide must end, that a ceasefire must happen, that the murdering of babies in incubators and doctors and nurses is inhumane. This is not a war. This is not a conflict. This is a violent oppression of indigenous people in their homes. And for people to be able to speak their truth and then be silenced, that's McCarthyism. Hollywood knows better. Not a good look, Hollywood. And let's remember who the first casualties of that were. They were Jews. What are you doing? This is McCarthyism. This is stifling free speech. This is a place where culture of the world is created. And what you are saying is that we feed you propaganda. We feed you propaganda of the imperialist powers that are violent. The war on terror, the United States war on terror, killed 6 million people in the Middle East. But right now, we are witnessing what that looks like in real time. And if you don't understand there's something wrong with that, I'm sorry for you. We are being denied the truth by Hollywood. They are stifling the truth.
In good news this week, after years of action and boycotts against them, Puma have finally dropped their sponsorship of the Israeli Football Association, which maintains teams in illegal Israeli settlements on stolen Palestinian land. For years, they've been one of the main targets of the BDS movement, and this victory demonstrates just how powerful boycotts are. It's an encouragement to keep up our boycotts, campaigns for divestment, and demands for sanctions. Music is a galvanizing and inspiring force for protest movements. In the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, freedom songs were a form of critique, resistance, and solidarity. Abdullah Ibrahim's 1974 song Mannenberg became the unofficial anthem of South Africa, unifying in its defiance to the apartheid system as a popular dance song. Performances of the song became associated with resistance to the apartheid state, with police even shutting down jazz events in fear that the song might be performed. Steve Biko describes soul music as containing the radical potential for defiance, solidarity, and self-assertion. Music has the power to politicize, energize, and unite people in their shared struggle. In the Palestinian Liberation Movement, music has played a significant part and global resistance, with songs played at protests, as demands for freedom, and to educate on the realities of Israeli occupation. Today, I'm joined by hip-hop artist and activist Loki.
Thank you so much for being with us here today, Loki.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
I wanted to start by asking you, in the context of the global strike for Palestine, which has been called from people on the ground, and weeks of direct action taken by groups like Palestine Action, who've been operating for years but have seriously ramped up actions recently. The newly formed PAL Action US to groups in the UK like Sisters Uncut, Palestinian Youth Movement in Britain, and new groups like Workers for a Free Palestine, who've now done like three blockades of arms factories across Britain. What do you make of this resurgence in resistance?
Well, I think this is one method of resistance that you're talking about, which is the withdrawal of compliance on key things. We have to remember 2021, you saw over 60,000 Palestinian construction workers go on strike in the political entity of Israel, and it caused over $40 million dollars worth of losses to the Israeli economy, and that was just one day. Now you're in a situation where Israel entering into a more pronounced form of fascism is trying to replace those 60,000 Palestinian construction workers throughout this war. And that has led to the construction industry at least halving its production. So its productivity. So, you know, that is having economic ramifications. In terms of the arms company moves that have been taken by different groups, including Palestine Action, you've seen in this country this to be direct action in tandem with local community action to be the most effective form of action. It's the only time we've seen in this country that an Israeli arms company, the largest Israeli arms company, Elbit Systems, which provides 85% of the drones that the Israeli military uses, actually sell a subsidiary in this country at a loss. And that was in Oldham in 2021, thanks to relentless action by Palestine Action and local people, not only demonstrating outside the factory, but also going door to door and giving information to local people about what was happening in the factory. And Palestine Action has also achieved the incredible permanent vacation of Israel's, of Elbit Systems' London offices. In addition to that, eventually the British Ministry of Defence cancelled £280 million worth of contracts with Elbit Systems due to Palestine Action's activity, it's believed. So definitely there's a vulnerability there, especially when you consider that Britain is a signatory to the Arms Trade Treaty, which means that it should not make any exports of arms if it has any reason to believe they may be used for violations of international humanitarian law. So clearly the arms trade in this country is a pressure point for Israel because it represents the most pronounced part of Israel's fascistic genocidal violence. So it's absolutely brilliant to see these developments, and we hope they increase.
Part of the call from Palestinian trade unions was calling on unions to take action. But actual trade unions have been relatively silent, it seems, in solidarity with Palestine recently. When trade unions were very active in the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, why do you think there's a difference now?
The problem is the following. All of the main trade unions in this country, from Unite to others, they have voted on BDS over a decade ago. Unanimously, their membership voted for BDS. That has not been something that's been implemented by those organizations. In fact, without a doubt, some of those trade unions will have members who are working on creating weapons for Israel in these factories in England. In addition to that, you have a trade union like the TUC, which has over 1.5 million pounds worth of shares in BAE Systems, the largest, that's the Trade Unions Congress, actually, the largest arms company in this country. In addition to that, you've got trade unions like both the GMB and the TUC who have joined in with the witch hunt and the cancelling of pro-Palestinian voices. I'm one of them. I was cancelled from the Tolpuddle Martyrs Festival by the TUC following intervention by Gary Smith, the head of the GMB union, who clearly got his dossier on me from the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, which is, of course, founded and headed by a board member of the JNF, which is Israel's largest settlement building body in Palestine, which also has the Israeli Prime Minister and President as patrons of that charity. So it's clear that there is an engagement going on between these trade union organizations and these Israel lobby groups, not just like the GMB, also the Board of Deputies and the CST. The Board of Deputies, of course, put in its trustees report that it has a close working relationship with the Israeli embassy. That was in 2020. And what's perhaps even more problematic than that is that these unions also fund pro-Palestinian organizations. And so it draws into question the limits of pro-Palestinianism in this country, and also it casts question marks on what are the ways in which that activism is sort of carefully curated and policed.
And we've also seen kind of at the UK government level, which is perhaps less surprising, but recently a 17-year-old was reported to prevent for taking part in a school strike where he went to picket an arms factory. We've heard teachers can't talk about Palestine, and children in schools are being suspended for drawing the Palestine flags in their notebook. It seems like the Israeli state interest has become a central part of UK government policy now, both in policing and in schools. I wonder if you have a take on that.
Absolutely, there's been an integration of British and Israeli security states over the past 3 decades, and this is one of the very visible manifestations of it. But what it means, this integration, is that Israel outsources some things to the British, and the British outsource some things to Israel. So, for instance, the British are currently training the Palestinian Authority to assume some semblance of puppet control in Gaza. They, on a day-to-day basis, it's the British who manage the Palestinian Authority for the Israelis, essentially. And then in the British case, the British police used to hack phones. A company called Cellebrite, or Cellebrite, was set up by veterans of Israeli intelligence and is headed by Dana Gerner, who is a veteran of Unit 8200, the Israeli Signals Intelligence Unit, the equivalent of GCHQ. And there's other ways in which Britain is reliant on organizations close to the Israeli military, like NICE systems. So the British police use NICE systems for investigations, and NICE systems is a subsidiary of Elbit Systems. Where we get into the schools question is there have been several organizations that have that work relentlessly to normalize Israel, that bring actually former Israeli military and intelligence personnel into British classrooms that are being now funded by the British government, even though historically they've been funded by people who also fund the Friends of the IDF, people who also fund settlements, people who also fund the Conservative Party and also fund Keir Starmer. So Britain is actually a participant in this war that we're talking about now. It's mainly an intelligence and logistics role. It's sending planes likely to be full of weapons from its base to Tel Aviv almost on a daily basis across this period of the war, which is an unusual increase in flights. Craig Murray, the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, has asserted that Britain is intercepting the communications of the Palestinian resistance factions from its base in Cyprus and sending that information to the Israelis. We also know about the R1 Shadow surveillance plane that Britain has sent out above Gaza, which is claiming that it's there for hostage rescue. But that's also what Israel claims its military campaign is about, hostage rescue. So therefore, this is a plane that specializes in target acquisition. Do we know that that's not what's happening? So Britain also has a relationship of selling components, nuts and bolts, really, of Israeli weaponry to Israel. So, for instance, in the F-16, there's the HUD technology, which is target selection, which is created by BAE Systems. There's 79 companies based here who produce components for the F-16 and the F-35 that Israel is currently using to bomb Gaza. So, an extension of that relationship is what's happening in the schools. And actually, it's interesting to look at Boris Johnson and his role in all of this, and the way that he's been very frontline in depicting the pro-Palestinian movement as somehow motivated by an irrational racism, when Boris Johnson, of course, was delivered into 10 Downing Street. He won the election off the back of what was an unprecedented level of coordination between Israeli and British intelligence, which was the coup against Corbyn. That in and of itself was a symptom of that relationship, of that marriage between these two different interests really working together in synergy. And so in the schools, you see something like Prevent being rolled out with a particularly anti-Palestinian inflection now, and it also functioning lock in step with organizations like Solutions Not Sides, which is this organization which brings former Israeli military personnel into British schools. You also have another organization, the Forum for Discussion of Israel-Palestine, which is another group that is basically sprouted out of Solutions Not Sides and has a normalization agenda. So the minds of young people, particularly on this issue in Britain, are very much a contested space.
In a similar way, I was going to ask you about the coup against Corbyn. For those who aren't aware, in 2015, Jeremy Corbyn became leader of the Labour Party as a self-declared socialist with a history of being on the right side, with very, very popular policies. And in the 2017 general election, it looked like he would win. But he was massively demonized by a major media frenzy, which labeled him anti-Semitic, terrorist sympathizer, amongst other things. And I think in reflection, as you say, that that was a symptom of what we're seeing more extremely in other realms of society. I wonder if you had any thoughts on the media in the UK and US and why every traditional news outlet, including some that claim to be left-wing, have followed the Zionist line.
Well, they've also been subject to a long-term campaign to subvert their ability to report truthfully and effectively on this. For instance, BBC has been targeted by BICOM for many decades. It's actually the largest Israel lobby group in this country, and different lobby groups have actually sprouted off from BICOM. It's headed by Richard Pater, who is a current reserve in the Israeli military and formerly was an employee of the Israeli Prime Minister's office. There's numerous former Israeli military and intelligence personnel throughout BICOM and diplomatic figures throughout BICOM, and it works to subvert the BBC. You even had a BBC employee, Mark Berg, go from working for the BBC to working for BICOM and then back to working for the BBC. You've had leaked correspondence of BICOM figures boasting about how easily they can manipulate the BBC. I even found at one point that the BBC simultaneously employed someone as an assistant producer who was a spokesman for the IDF, literally at the same time. So ultimately, what you're talking about here is a long-term project of manipulation and in some cases infiltration. So you have a gentleman by the name of Alex Brummer, who is the city editor at the Daily Mail. But simultaneous to that, he is a key figure at the Board of Deputies, the vice president, if I remember correctly. And he's also a key figure at the Abraham Initiative organization. Now, the Abraham Initiative is funded by the Israeli Ministry of Justice and the Israeli Ministry of Labor. And according to its own trustees report, it exists to create synergy between Israeli and British agencies and institutions. So it's an Israel lobby group. Now, this person is a high-ranking journalist at the Daily Mail. Are we surprised that the Daily Mail then has a very well-pronounced pro-Israel slant on everything? You also have the Daily Telegraph, where you've got the former Labour MP Ian Austin, who is an Israel lobbyist. This is someone who's received tens of thousands of pounds per year when he was in Parliament from Israel lobby groups, and was on the steering committee of the West Midlands Friends of Israel. So this is the sort of mood music of where we are at this point in the US. It's a far bigger and more well-funded operation, but in the UK throughout the Corbyn years, it intensified massively. And but really, what it reflects is how out of touch these media companies generally are with public opinion, because public opinion is massively in the other direction. And I think they're finding it quite hard to marry those two things, because what they're saying and what the reality is are so wide apart. There's such a big chasm between those two things. And so it's interesting to see them kind of trying to salvage some type of reputation for reliable news.
In terms of like people's faith in kind of bodies and institutions, seeing just recently the US veto the UN vote on a ceasefire despite an overwhelming support from other member states, and now the UN General Assembly seeming to plan a special session on Palestine. What do you think the impacts are of this for US hegemony and people's faith in these international institutions and the liberal international order at large?
Well, I mean, it's always been a lie. It's been revealed to be a lie with the war on terror that saw 46 bombs drop per day on average for 20 years by the United States and its allies, the killing of millions of people and the displacement of over 30 million people. So this, unfortunately, is a continuation of that. And unfortunately, I worry that this situation now is a precursor to a wider regional war that daily is becoming more of an inevitability. Now, in terms of the US role, according to the Israeli Ministry of Defense, the US have sent over 200 planes with full of weapons, 10,000 tons of military equipment to Israel throughout this war. The US Reaper drones went above Gaza almost every day for the first month of the war. And so, the question has to be asked here is, what is the extent of US involvement? It's my belief that US and British involvement in this war is unprecedented. None of the previous wars on Gaza had this level of involvement that I know of. You also have US special forces there. It seems Delta Force, US Delta Force, were present on the ground with the Israeli military. We found out that an organization called Forward Observation Group, which is US mercenaries who recently were active in Ukraine with the Azov Battalion and the Right Sector, are now on the ground with the Israeli military. So this is a US and British war. And unfortunately, the Germans are also heavily involved in armaments for the Israelis. So what you're going to see is a regional war. And I wonder just the extent to which the UAE and Saudi Arabia will assist in it, because Saudi Arabia was the key funder for Jared Kushner's Affinity Partners hedge fund. Now, Saudis put in over $2 billion into this venture with Jared Kushner. Now, Affinity Partners is the part owner of an Israeli company called Shlomo Group. Now, the Shlomo Group has been equipping several units in the Israeli military. You also look at the UAE investments. Their national investment fund has over $15 million invested in an Israeli drone company. So, really, what we're seeing is an unprecedented involvement from both regional and international actors in Israel's war, essentially a tripartite aggression on a civilian population. And it's truly horrific what we're seeing. And I think the job for us is to get that information out as widely as possible in order for people to actually understand what is happening and the extent of the involvement of their governments. It's all well and good asking the British government to call for a ceasefire, but they are a direct participant in what's happening. And so that kind of changes the question of whether they will be able to call for a ceasefire. Britain has a secret military agreement with Israel, which no one can have access to. It's more integrated with Israel than it has been at any point in its history. So there's serious question marks here about Britain's involvement in this genocidal war.
Thank you so much. We'll be back after this break with Loki. You're listening to CodePink Radio, coming to you through Pacifica Radio's WPFW in Washington, D.C., WBAI in New York City, KPFT in Houston, and KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
وقف الطفل وحده والليالي ورصاص من حوله وجنود وقف الطفل والحجارة أكوام وعيناه عزمة وصمود وعيناه عزمة وصمود
Image out of my heart when we've seen the bodies found in a mountain of parts. Netanyahu told you just another child of the dark. Clear it's gonna take much more than thousands to march, more than a speech, more than a poem, more than a track of music. Gonna take more than a sit down with Bassem Youssef. Even bringing back ambassadors is an act that's useless, long as you pump oil for Apaches and the tanks they're using. Freedom just beyond reach for people you cannot see. He's wheezing and cannot breathe and screaming through the concrete, looking for his four children. The bombs leave structures that I wouldn't want to call buildings. My fingers pointed at this government, you all killed them. Tell me that you wouldn't take up arms if those were your children. Let me make the factor clear, if bombs were manufactured here and they want the land as theirs because of natural gas in there. Feel death in the atmosphere while we hapless stand and stare, and a little boy begs for his brother's strand of hair. Truth is I don't know how anyone can live after digging for their dead kids buried under bricks. Israel is a terror state, terrorists that terrorize. I testify, my television televised, I'm telling lies. This is not a war, it is systematic genocide. But whatever they try, Palestine will never die.
Palestine.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
Palestine.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
Palestine.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name.
Palestine.
They're not prepared to face the pain, so they're scared to say your name. And
paramedics is hurting, the panic spreading. Hospitals where the doctors do C-sections, no anesthetics. The pressure is manifesting, humanity stands connected. Masses seem apathetic and actually just accept it. When our grandchildren ask us, what did we do to stop it? I'm determined to say, I did more than make music on it. That's why we shut down arms factories, you can try stopping us. Palestine actions, the opposite of white phosphorus. We tell them on the television, but they never listen. Tell Piers Morgan that resistance isn't terrorism. They want them fled or missing, death or prison, endless killing. I seen a father hold his baby up, the head was missing. Imagine demolition of home where your parents living. Kings won't say a thing, but at least we know that Yemen's with them. Ethnic cleansing, it ain't hard to see the stages, but Gaza is a graveyard of the invaders. Ears close to the savagery, clear though when there's clarity. The journalists and doctors are heroes of humanity. As sordid and as gory as this story is for now, and they depopulating Gaza for Ben-Gurion's canal. Israel is a terror state, terrorists that terrorize. I testify my television, televise, I'm telling lies. This is not a war, it is systematic genocide. But whatever they try, Palestine will never die.
My Khalil and Loki. Welcome back. I'm Nafpri at Copink, and you're listening to Copink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFT in Houston, and KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. Today, we're joined with artist, academic, and activist Loki.
In your song, you say, in the genocide in Palestine, you want your children to know you made more than just music on it. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean by investigative work. I mean by supporting important political campaigning groups. That's what I meant.
Every action and like rally that I've ever been to, I think, about Palestine has always played your music. And I can also say I've been pretty much exclusively listening to it for the past few months. What do you think the role of music is, not just yours, but of other people too, in the Palestinian liberation movement?
So Moshe Dayan, who was a key Zionist fighter in the 30s, went on to be the defense minister of the political entity of Israel. He once said that the poetry of Fedwa Tuqan from the Tuqan family, a very well-known Palestinian family from Nablus that created musicians, academics, and poets, he said one poem from her was the equivalent of 20 fighters on the front line. Now, I wouldn't say that necessarily about myself, and I think in the big tech age, things have changed greatly. You know, the kind of violence that Israel was able to mete out before was significantly less because of the development of technology and the stage that technology was at that time. But, you know, when you look at the response of Israel to work like Darin Tartor, the Palestinian poet who wrote the poem Qawim Ya Sha'bi Qawimhum, she was arrested and spent years on house arrest and spent a long time in jail. You know, Israel certainly fears artistic expression that can sort of crystallize these feelings that many people feel and put them into songs that can become slogans and that can be repeated. So, you know, when you also consider the campaign against me and the attempt to kind of take my music off of Spotify and stuff like that, it's quite clear that the music is considered a threat.
What kind of music inspired you growing up? What made you think of music as a way to channel your politics?
Well, you know, you look at the work of someone like Ahmed Kaabur, and his song "Anadikum." You know, he's finding a way to reach across boundaries, not only document history, but also send a message out to people that need it. It's sort of, for me, a way to articulate and add an emotional sense to words and give people a reflection of what they're seeing in music. You know, people like Tupac did that very well, you know, making more visible what were the suffering of people, and essentially encouraging empathy in others through music. That's been something that I think actually listening to rap as a young child taught me. It made me think about other people's reality more than I would have before. And it also gave me a way to understand it. So ultimately, that's what I aspire to do with my music too.
In terms of, other people like yourself who have been, suppressed and specifically targeted by the Zionist lobby, we're seeing somewhat of a similar thing with other celebrities in Hollywood in particular, who otherwise hadn't, faced such attacks, like who've been dropped from their agencies for speaking in support of Palestine. But mostly we've seen either tacit or often overt support for Israel by many major celebrities. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, the reality is that within the film industry, there are particular figures at particular companies who, you know, the WikiLeaks, Sony leaks revealed high-ranking figures at Sony Film Productions. Amy Pascal, one of them, heavily involved with Israel lobby groups. Michael Linton went to meet Benjamin Netanyahu. This was the head of Sony at the time. You know, and this was an organization producing some of the most important films of the time. You also had the example of Arnon Milchan, who's a very well-known Hollywood producer, who was Israeli intelligence for a long time. And is believed to still work for Israeli intelligence, according to interviews with him. He's implied that. So you also have something called Creative Community for Peace, which is a project of Stand With Us that works in both the film and the music industry, that is explicitly an anti-BDS organization. And so it works to try and persuade figures in the film and the music industries, to go and visit Tel Aviv and take part in these kind of normalization things. But you look at who supports the Creative Community for Peace organization, it's very high level figures in both the music and the film industry, really the upper echelon of executives there. And so there does exist within both of these industries a heavy Israel lobby contingent. And so then for you to operate within those industries with a degree of independence and be able to really speak your mind on Palestine is quite difficult. And so you're seeing the case with Susan Sarandon, who was dropped by United Talent Agency. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if more happens. And I also wouldn't be surprised if people are being made offers. You know, when Harvey Weinstein, for example, was accused of sexual assault, he hired Black Cube, which is in his private Israeli intelligence company, which came out of Unit 8200, to spy on his accusers. So you have to wonder about where this connection comes from. What's he doing, able to casually mobilize an outgrowth of Israeli intelligence to actually impersonate supporters? That's what this agent from Black Cube did. She impersonated a supporter of this accuser of Harvey Weinstein and tried to infiltrate the campaign. So, these things exist. They are real, and they are working. These organizations and these people within these organizations are working for their interests.
And in a similar way, this makes you think to like universities and academics who have faced this repression for a number of years, particularly at universities in the UK. And now we see that kind of on maybe a more extreme way, both in the UK and US, where universities have been silent, if only to condemn Hamas. And seen in Colombia, the SGP have been suspended. Students at SOAS, University of London, have been suspended as part of the Palestine Society. Whereas in 2022, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, my university in particular handed out hundreds of scholarships to Ukrainians, flew the Ukrainian flag. How can we understand this discrepancy, both in universities and a society at large?
Because Ukraine was a reflection of NATO military aspirations. The Ukraine war was something that NATO powers had worked to bring into existence. And Britain are deeply wrapped up and had been deeply wrapped up with the forming of a military and political elite in Ukraine post 2014. And they had a hostile stance towards Russia. And so then the society has the permission, the implicit rules that sort of govern our society said that you could, of course, you were encouraged to support Ukraine in every and any way, even including sending charity, which was essentially military aid. All of that was encouraged. Whereas, over 37 countries in the world are Ukraine, in terms of the Palestinian right to armed resistance, there's only one state in the world that actively supported that, materially speaking, and it was not a European state. So, therefore, that really shows where this double standard and contradiction comes from. Ultimately, the Israeli occupation of Palestine is business as usual, and Britain is, like I say, a participant in many different ways. There's a myriad of charities here that are funneling money into the occupied territories to build illegal settlements, which the British government itself opposes, supposedly on paper. You've even got the case of these ships which are being taken off of Yemen. These ships are often Zodiac Maritime ships or Zim ships, which are owned by the Offa family. Now, the Sunday Times reported in 2011, if I remember correctly, that these ships were being used to quote unquote ferry elite units of the Israeli intelligence agencies, external intelligence agency, around the Middle East to carry out assassinations in Dubai, in Iran. And when one of these assassinations happened in Dubai, the agents used fake British passports. And because of that, the British government expelled several Israeli diplomats. However, what they didn't do was stop this company, Zodiac Maritime, from being registered in Britain. It's a British registered company. Now, fast forward to today, who is the private military company which guards these ships? It's Ambrey, which is an outgrowth of the British Ministry of Defence and is staffed by formerly high-ranking employees of the British Ministry of Defence. So we actually see where we've gone from 2010, when that assassination happened, to now, 13, 14 years later, and it's actually Britain guarding those ships rather than expelling people for being on those ships and carrying out assassinations. They're actually now guarding the ship. So the integration is further than it's ever been.
Yeah, you spoke about the Gulf states and their complicity here as well. On the other side, we've seen, the most major support for Palestine in Yemen and with resistance in Iraq and Syria. Where does Palestine lie in terms of American imperialism, which you touched on a bit? But why are we seeing these countries who have faced the most violence from the so-called war on terror and US aggression show the strongest support to Palestine? And at the same time, why is the US not taking strong action against them?
Well, the US is, both, Israel has bombed Syria 1,000 times in 5 years. The Saudi war on Yemen, which was the greatest humanitarian catastrophe of our time, led to over 90,000 people believed to have starved to death, actually, by several reputable humanitarian organizations. This was a US and British proxy war, and the Saudis were fighting on behalf of these international actors and lost. They were not able to defeat the fighting force there in Yemen. And the reality is that both the Palestinian resistance, the Lebanese resistance, the Syrian government, the Iraqi government to some extent, but Iraqi resistance groups there, now the Yemeni government, they are part of a regional force which acts together, which shares intelligence, which works out ways for it to act within the interest of driving US influence from the region. Now, I believe that US support for what Israel is doing and involvement in this war is likely to render its presence in the region more precarious and speed up its exit. But I think the other trajectory, which the Israelis have in mind, is that US help and British help and EU help will then allow them to neutralize Hezbollah, which will be a far bigger war, far more costly, and far more human suffering will be incurred by trying to fight Hezbollah in Lebanon.
I was wondering what you think right now about social media and how it's being used to cut through other propaganda we're seeing. There's lots of stories of people on TikTok, particularly saying they grew up in various Zionist households, but only in the past few weeks from seeing content on social media, they've realized what Israeli occupation really is. We've also seen Palestinian resistance use social media, journalists in Palestine with millions of followers, and people very, very engaged online, particularly again, I think on TikTok as this a new mode that lots of mainstream media is worried about. Are you hopeful for the future of Palestinian solidarity in the age of social media?
Well, I think three things are true with your question. So, first one, social media is primarily a way to produce value through constant surveillance of users, and we are the product. And so, social media apps are monitoring us, experimenting on us in several ways throughout the day, and creating value by every little thing that we do with our phone. The other side is that we are reaching people in a way we've never been able to before, and we are breaking those walls of sort of censorship through omission, whereas the information normally has to pass through many different funnels before it reaches people. Which includes editors who have a particular ideological slant. And so that's not happening. And the third thing that is true is that Israel will not be able to achieve its objectives without staining its reputation, possibly terminally. To do what Israel wants to do, and it has these fantastical, idealistic, ambitious, unrealistic aims, which the Zionist movement has always been like that. It's always sought to go far beyond what seems really possible at the time, and that's why it's needed such spectacular violence to do what it does, and cruelty on an industrial scale to sustain what it does. But the objective that it wants to achieve here, which is pushing all of the Palestinians out of Gaza, is really going to radicalize generations of people, and they are not going to forget it in a hurry. The Palestinians will culturally hold a significance among humanity that Israel will absolutely hate. But that's the price of what it's hoping to achieve. So very interesting times indeed.
One more thing on social media. I think what you're saying is interesting, that there's the balance between its utility and the fact that it is incredibly structural. So like Twitter, I think a few months ago, what Elon Musk's Twitter said that they would be using like an Israeli company to verify people's identities, and you yourself faced, and I'm not sure if you still do, but the shadow bans where you can't search for you. So it's both the case, it seems, of awareness that Twitter is actually being used as a way to get the truth out to people, but at the same time, it is one of the most extreme iterations of like surveillance capitalism.
Exactly. Absolutely, yeah.
And yeah, just as the this is a final thing, as we're are coming up to in December and a holidays period. Now we've already seen in the UK Palestine Solidarity Campaign are not doing another mass rally, which they have been for the last few weeks, which have had massive turnouts until January, as well as a lot of people going back to Christmas activities. We've seen a variety of disruptions of no business as usual. Bethlehem's cancel Christmas. How can you have joy during genocide? But what do you think the next few weeks will look like in Britain and in Europe and in the United States, as we're forced in a similar way to a few weeks ago, Black Friday and Thanksgiving, to consume, to look away from what's happening in Palestine? What do you think the future is of the next few weeks in organizing and resistance?
Well, I don't think that the resistance will go anywhere, regardless of liberal mainstream leadership of organizations taking whatever decisions they like. People will continue to take action on a daily basis, and Israel has never faced as much resistance as it is now all over the world. So I don't see that dying down anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I don't either. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. It's been really, really incredible to hear your thoughts as always.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Loki on Code Pink Radio. This week at Code Pink, we'll be in San Pedro, California on Friday for our weekly Palestine rally. We'll be honoring the courageous journalists of Gaza on Missing Peace Mondays, our community hour. And we're in Congress this week from 10 to 4 p.m., demanding they stop sending our money to finance Israel's war crimes. Thank you for listening to Code Pink Radio, presented by WBAI in New York City, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFT in Houston, and KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
You think they're foes? They're in business together. Danny Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before. Been